Hey guys, welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 99. In this episode, we are talking about the movie Justice League. We have invited nobody because the whole thing was such an unbelievable train wreck. We didn't want to embarrass the cast by having anybody from the movie on. So that being said, I want to remind you that we are available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search for Three Drinks In podcast. You can easily find us. Hit that subscribe button so you never have to miss an episode. And while you're there, leave us a rating or maybe even a review. We'd really appreciate that. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at 3DrinksInPod. That's at the number 3, DrinksInPod. 3DrinksInPodcast on Instagram and Facebook. And questions, concerns, comments, and complaints can be sent to 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. All right, everybody. Sit back, strap in, crack them open. Here we go.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Aquaman. And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Tonight I am drinking the Two Roads Road to Ruin Double IPA.
Ooh, it's a good one.
Oh, yes. What's the one with bite.
What's the ABV on that son of a bitch?
Oh, it's like 9.5, something like that.
I've 8.5 over here with the Boulevard Brewing Company Tank 7 Farmhouse Ale. I really debated bringing down the bourbon for this one because, whew. Man, rough one.
Yeah, it was a rough movie. I don't think it was as awful as, I didn't feel as awful as the last one, though.
Well, I mean, first off, we invited no one to this podcast because I didn't want to talk to anybody who was in this movie. Sometimes I can kind of go, well, this part was all right. I have literally nothing nice to say about the film as a whole, and so I didn't want to drag poor Ben Affleck in here and make him account for what the heck is going on in this movie. As I'm sure he would, you know, willingly do. It's worse than Batman v Superman on a very fundamental level. That movie was more successful in execution of its story. That movie was harder to watch because it was sort of like a punch in the dick. You know, that horrifying scene where Batman's dreaming about murdering all the winged aliens in the desert and like all like the nightmarish stuff. And then Superman dies and like, you know, that was sort of like, whoa, Jesus Christmas. Like, it was worse in terms of its, I don't know, things about it were, you know, but there were also really great scenes in that movie, like this, like the fight scene that the Batman has in the warehouse was fantastic.
So there was one really great scene.
Yeah, one really great scene. This movie didn't even have that. You know,
okay.
I mean, and there were moments where I could, you know, watch Batman v Superman and go, all right, I know what's going on. I know who all these people are and what they want and. You know, I don't understand everything, but I get the general idea. I mean, this movie fails at every level, almost in totality. So, you know, I was horrified at points of Batman v Superman. I was simply bored to the point of discomfort with this movie. Like, I literally could not get comfortable in the chair I was sitting in. And I had, like, the whole road to myself. I had my feet up on the chair in front of me. I was just, but I just could not get comfortable. It was, I was so aware of my surroundings.
Okay.
So that's where we're starting off with.
I'm going to nonchalantly disagree with you and say that Batman v Superman was the far worse picture. Because along with being so crushingly depressing and dark and difficult to stomach, like I like felt like I was gasping for air when I got out of that theater. I was like, oh my God, sunlight feels good on my skin. Whoa. And I didn't know that was coming. Like, I just didn't know it was going to be that way. It was hard to handle. That was like really the only movie I think I've ever heard children wail and cry out in terror. They were just so upset. In this movie, there were kids behind me laughing, having a good time. But Batman v Superman is so fundamentally broken as a story. You know, the leaps of logic and the lack of motivation and a lot of that's just the editing. But I still watched the extended cut for some reason, and it still didn't make a whole lot more sense.
And you felt this film made more sense than that movie?
I think it made enough sense that I knew what was happening. I was like, okay, this monster of some sort wants three things, and he wants to take over the world. Got it. Okay, that I can follow.
But here's the thing.
It's not much more complicated than that.
No, it's not a lot more complicated. But here's the thing. If you didn't know, and I know this is kind of naive to say because we live in an age of franchises and you have to be up, you know, with it on the franchise. But if there's something to be said for the idea that somebody should be able to walk into a movie relatively unaware of who people are and any previous versions of the characters that may have appeared in films within the last couple of years and watch it and kind of get it. Here, this movie relies entirely on the fact that you know who Superman is and who Batman is. And I get it that it'd be stupid to think that there's somebody who doesn't know who they are living in America today who's at least moderately aware of popular culture. But the fact that this movie relies entirely on the audience's, you know, pre-knowledge of the characters and who they are. That's the only reason I was able to follow anything is because I know that this is a good guy and that's a bad guy. I didn't always know that. You know, if you look at it from a purely sort of objective point of view, divorced from, you know, previous source material, you wouldn't really know why anybody wanted to do anything more than what you just described, which is this is the guy, this or the bad guy, this is the MacGuffin, and these are the good guys, I guess, even though they don't seem to give a crap about anything unless the script tells them to.
All right. So, well, I'm still not saying this is a good movie. It's,
no, you're
it's
not.
It's not. I didn't enjoy most of it. I didn't enjoy anything in Batman vs. Superman. I enjoyed about 2% of this film when Superman appeared. I actually woke up a little like, hey, Superman is in this. Cool.
Well, you knew that he was in the movie, right?
Yeah, and they let him smile. No, I knew he was coming. He wasn't there for so long that it was a very boring slog.
All right, but let's just go over the plot for a minute so I can refresh myself, even though it seems like it was a week ago.
So you didn't like it. You didn't like it, I'm telling.
No, I didn't. I hated this freaking movie. It's absolutely embarrassing. All right, so the basic plot of the film is that the rock band Steppenwolf sends an emissary down through a lightning beam to try to collect these mother boxes that are scattered throughout Middle Earth. And our heroes have to stop him from doing all of this. That's the general idea of the story, right?
Yeah, that's it.
And in the background, is everybody is sad that Superman died because he was a symbol of hope.
Yeah.
Right.
And which I take enormous issue with.
Oh, yeah. And so the first thing that happens is the Steppenwolf gets the mother box from the woefully inept Amazonians.
Yeah.
Really. It was like watching the Clone Wars.
I believe it's Amazonians. Let's try to be politically correct here.
Okay.
And then this beer is like 9.8.
Then after that happens, he gets the second one from where? From Atlantis?
Atlantis. Well done, everyone. Well done.
Yeah. And then the third one is the one that they get to first, and they use that to wake up zombie Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And bring him back to life for 18 minutes. He doesn't know who anybody is, and they have a nice little knockdown, drag-out fight, and he goes back to Kansas. And then they go after the big guy, and they don't do quite so great, and they're in Russia for no good reason whatsoever. And then Superman shows up and punches people harder, and then it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while, I mean, I just did that in 3 minutes, but this is stretched out by banging noises and jibber jabber.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's the gist of what happens in the movie. No one says anything important ever, right?
How so? How important?
Character development-wise. I mean, they tell you what's going to happen. Rather than show you anything flat out, they just say, this guy does this, and this guy does that. And then they talk you through the whole film. And Bruce Wayne makes some kind of nonsense out of what science is supposed to be. That was my favorite line. It's not a complicated thing, I guess. But that's what happens in the film.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Right. I mean, this gets a lot of comparisons to the Avengers. And that's not a complicated thing either. A guy comes from outer space and he's looking for a box and he wants to take over the world with it. And the Avengers have to come together at the end and fight him and take the box back. Okay, that's really not complicated. What the benefit is that Marvel had several movies to set all this up. And they said, we're doing this as a continuous thing. Like after The Incredible Hulk, they were like, we can make this like a comic book, and each one is a little chapter right before the big one where they all get together. This movie is built on the bones of Man of Steel, which I'm sure was not meant to be a cinematic thing at all. And then they were like, well, then we need to have a Batman and Superman movie because we have to get them both in there somehow. And then they tried to crank out Suicide Squad and expand on the world a little bit. And each one was worse than the last. And I know everyone is still trying to get their panties out of a twist because of Wonder Woman being so great. Wonder Woman was just okay. It's just when you watch something like this, it looks a lot better. And that I understand. I mean, it wasn't a bad film. It just wasn't the second coming of Jesus. It was just an okay movie. So then you got this movie. And now you've got too many cooks in the kitchen trying to make this work. Okay. So I am sure someone from up on high said, this movie needs to be bright. It needs to be funny. It needs to be under 2 hours. You know, we have to have everything in there. The CGI has to look good. And then it all fell apart because none of that happened except it was under 2 hours.
That's true. It was 1 minute under 2 hours.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, you're trying to make a movie with both hands behind your back. And you've hitched your wagon, as I've said 100 times, to a crummy director who most people don't like.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean,
it's very important who's driving the cart.
It was also very obvious to me at points when Joss Whedon's writing took over.
Oh, yeah.
It was like... Yeah.
Oh, what was it like? I'm trying to think of a very funny analogy.
When that scene where, like, they're on the plane and Superman says something to Batman. Batman goes, well, I don't not like you or something like that. I mean, when my friend Scott, who we had on the podcast years ago, who was the director from that web series Haywire that I was in, he pointed out to us that, like, Joss Whedon actually isn't that good of a writer. Maybe a decent director, but definitely not a good writer. And I, you know, he did one of those like glass shattering things where he pointed something out that was obvious from that point forward, which was that all of Joss Whedon's characters sound the same. Or if he needs one guy to be funny in a particular scene, he'll sacrifice that character consistency to make the joke. And it happens all throughout the Avengers, but because it happens all throughout the Avengers, you notice it less. This script or this movie came to him, he took over for Zack Snyder, as everyone knows, following the unfortunate suicide of Zack Snyder's daughter, which, you know, we are very sorry to hear about that. It's a terrible tragedy. And so he kind of had to figure out what to do when a lot of it's already done. And it sort of stands out a lot more if it wasn't consistent.
Yeah. It was like pinning an actual fake tail to an actual real live donkey. And watching the donkey kick you as you attempt to do so, because I think the worst offender was when Batman and Superman comes back to life and they're fighting and he finds Batman and he's about to kill him because Batman tried to kill him. And he's, you know, he turns it around on him like, do you bleed? Well, the world doesn't need you. And then Lois Lane comes to jog some sense into him. And when Batman's laying there in agony, he goes, oh, yep, that's going to bleed. Oh, that's bleeding. Oh, I'm like, what? No, he would never say that. No. It's not because he's Batman, but because no human would ever be able to speak after such an event. Oh, it's just, like, I actually flinched in the chair like, ooh, that wasn't good.
Yeah.
It was just so obvious that Joss Whedon had put that scene into the movie long after the movie had been finished.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He also brightened it considerably. I mean, the film was much brighter.
Like visually brighter?
Visually, yeah. Like Superman's suit practically glowed. It was so blue.
Yeah, that was like an electric coolant acid test.
Yeah. And the Flash. And a lot of the scenes were reshot or switched to the daytime. And the Red Letter Media guys pointed that out, where, like, if you watch the original trailers where certain scenes were at night. You know, when they fight Superman after he comes back to life, that scene was at night. And Joss Whedon set it in the early morning and the sun was out.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that, but it doesn't jibe with the whole depressing tone that's still an undercurrent.
Yeah.
It's like a Frankenstein of a movie kind of thing here.
Yeah. Things were overwrought but underdeveloped. You know, I didn't know who... I have no information about The Flash or about Cyborg at all. I only know the other three guys because there were movies about them. Aquaman gets one bizarre inserted scene underwater that gives you almost no information whatsoever.
I don't remember what was the point of that?
There was no point.
No, they were supposed to give him a little bit of backstory, but it happened so quickly that I still don't remember what she said.
Like,
he's an orphan of some kind.
She chastises him for something. I'm not even sure what it was. And he shrugs it off like it was no big deal because the person who she's talking about, he thinks, was not that great.
Yeah.
It just was slapped in here and there, and it just didn't... You know,
I thought
editing
it was worse
was
when
just so bad.
I thought it was worse when he was sitting on Wonder Woman's rope and it was accidentally making him tell the truth. Because I'm like, why is he blabbing this to them? He sounds like a mental patient. And then he realizes he's sitting on the lasso of truth. I'm like, I thought it had to be around you.
I thought it had to be, you know, a known quantity in the scene for it to be of any effect.
Yeah. Like, well, that's a quick way to just have him spill his guts.
Yeah.
Because they don't spend any time together as, like, a group.
No, and, like, they have no reason to be anywhere. There's nothing that says they have to do this. They have a couple of quick scenes where it's like, we're going to try to get this guy. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, but look, he showed up anyway. Like, what?
Yeah.
You know, so.
It's also, I don't remember that Aquaman scene because what's her name? Amber Heard, I believe, was the female woman.
Yeah. The female woman?
The female Atlantean, I suppose.
Aqua Lady.
And she was just so stunningly gorgeous that she took my breath away. I could not get over how beautiful she was.
She's a handsome gal.
Oh, my goodness.
What was she in before this? I'm not even sure.
She was also in Zombieland, The Danish Girl, Magic Mike, XXL, you know, the usual stuff that I would normally see.
The classics.
Yeah. That's why I was just like, holy crap, who is that? I mean, it's the same thing when Henry Cavill pops out with his shirt off and everybody just kind of gasps because he was in amazing shape. I mean,
oh,
he looks so much like Superman. It's ridiculous.
A lot of skinless chicken.
Oh, my.
A low weight, high rep. So here's a few things that nobody understands at all. Why does Steppenwolf all of a sudden come out of nowhere and want these things? And how does he get around?
The idea is, now I know how he gets around just on comic book lore, but I was mad they didn't explain it. But I do know that he appears because apparently it's well known that Superman died. And without Superman, the Earth is now vulnerable to whoever feels like conquering it.
Even though no one gave a rat's ass about it before Superman showed
up. Yeah. But it was mentioned somewhere that was like, well, now that Superman's gone, you know, aliens are coming out of the woodwork. I'm like, they are? Okay. He's only been dead, like, what, a month? I don't know.
Out of the woodwork?
I don't know. It wasn't said.
And yet there was a scene where, like, it was like a scene on the news where, like, I forget. Oh, it was the janitor. The janitor disappears because he gets killed by the bug people. And there's, like, a quick news brief where the sarcastic news anchor was like, and this lady says that aliens stole her husband. Do you believe that, guys? I go, well, Jesus Christ, wouldn't that be really freaking possible given everything that's gone on? I mean, that's what kills me about this is that when the Avengers happened, and I don't like to compare these movies because they're the same, but they're not exactly. But when the Avengers happens and that, you know, hole opens up over Times Square and all the alien things come out and they blow up half the city, in no other story does everything kind of go back to normal. You know, like in Daredevil, in Luke Cage, in all these different movies, like that event in Iron Man 3, like that event is so traumatic to everybody at multiple levels, from the guy on the street to Iron Man himself, that it informs a lot of the storyline from that point forward, you know, on multiple platforms, on Netflix, in the films, everything. But here, it's just kind of an afterthought. Like, they're not very diligent in making sure that people's reactions to this event are consistent, or at least their memories of it are consistent, which is really annoying because they're trying to make you remember that this all happened. It was a big deal, you know? Like, these movies are really about not so much the superheroes themselves, but about humankind's reaction to discovering that they're not alone in the universe and everything out there is really crazy and dangerous. And Superman was an important protector for them, given what they've now learned about what's really going on outside their planet. But yet they're going to have some guy casually make a crack about this, you know, this entirely plausible thing about this guy, this janitor being abducted by aliens.
Here's the other problem that the Avengers doesn't have. And it was a little ham-fisted in the second Avengers, but in the first one, when they're in the city in New York, I thought it was handled pretty well. There's actual human beings in the Avengers. There's just regular people. And then you see the cops trying to fight the aliens. And you see people hiding and running and screaming. And lives were lost. And it's treated like a big deal, mostly. And this one, it felt extremely claustrophobic. It was just constantly on the heroes or Ben Affleck and everybody else. Like, Wonder Woman saves a bunch of people in the museum or in the bank in the very beginning of the film. And then you constantly flash back to this Russian family that's like trying to hide from the bugs. Okay, that's two groups of people. Where's everybody else? Why don't they call the fucking army? And then there's some bullshit line about why the Amazons can't leave their island and the Atlanteans don't want to come help and all this stuff. This is like a worldwide threat. And Batman's like, I need the guy who talks to fish. You know, fuck nuclear weapons. We don't need that.
Yeah, it is.
Call it's, a jet. Call a tank. Call somebody.
It is very kind of narrowly focused, especially if you consider, even though the second Avengers film was really bad, or was it the, no, I'm sorry, this, the, it was, I'm thinking of Civil War. So Civil, the third Captain America movie, you know, that entire film is about the UN, essentially. It's about, you know, the governments of the earth getting together and going, okay, what do we do about all these crazy things? There's none of that here. You know, and like one of the things that really intrigued me about the first Superman movie when I saw the trailers was the shot of Superman hovering above the tanks in the desert. I always thought that was a really cool shot because basically, you know, the original Superman movie from 1978 was great and it was fun and everyone had a good time. Because, you know, it was the 70s and there was a lot of cocaine going on. But it was just kind of comic book accepted that, like, all right, he's a Superman and he's here to help us, and you know, we believe him. It's no reason not to, right? Mm-hmm. And in this movie, or in these franchises, everyone is very skeptical of what, as they would be. I mean, it's a natural reaction to what you're seeing. So where did all that go? Like, now that Superman's here and he's proved himself, like, where, you're right, where do all the people go? That was a primary, you know, driving point of the plot in the first Man of Steel movie, was human, you know, was humanity's reaction to what's going on. Now it happens in the periphery, and we're told everyone's sad about this. Well, show me some sad people besides Ma Kent and Lois Lane.
Yeah,
everyone's running around as if it's Tuesday, and the world didn't almost end, you know, a year and a half ago.
Right. Well, that's my big problem with, it was my problem with Batman vs. Superman too. And it, you don't hire Zack Snyder when you're trying, he's, you know, he's very good at showing you the dark underbelly, seemingly depressing side of things. And that isn't who Superman is. And he tried to shoehorn that in. So through a lot of the movie, there was a lot of, well, if he's really that helpful, but he also blew up a building, all those buildings, why doesn't he come forward and admit he was wrong and this and that? And they had this, that one montage of him saving people, saving the tanker through ice, this, that, the other. He was doing it with this grim, stoic face, like he was unhappy to be helping everyone.
Right.
And he never said, sure wish I could help everybody. He just sort of did it begrudgingly. And so, and especially when Batman's sitting here going, we need to murder his ass because it's just ridiculous to have a guy flying around. You're like, well, I thought everyone loved him. but they don't love him. And so in this one, everyone's real sad. He showed real hope. He showed us the best of what we could be. I must have missed the meeting.
Where we all talked about that.
I'm sure the memo went to my spam folder. Now, when was the meeting where we all agreed that Superman was the best of mankind? That's what I get for skipping the Evites.
Yeah.
No, and that's a big thing, because that's just not who Superman is, to say that he's, you know, I always reference that Justice League cartoon, but they basically did the same plot where the government had to have up countermeasures, but they set it up that this might become a possibility. It's the reason why Spider-Man works. And I know I'm doing that thing with where I wave my hand around like it's the principle of the thing. Why is it that Spider-Man does all this good and a lot of people like him, but a lot of people don't like him? First of all, he's not saving airplanes from falling out of the sky. You know, he's helping people with muggers and shit like that. Well, when you're constantly being slandered, you get two sides to the story. Because it could be a little suspicious that, oh, well, I lost my wallet and then Spider-Man tried to help me, but the guy got away. So the newspaper goes, Spider-Man lost the guy's wallet. And so when Superman saves a plane from falling out of the sky, where's the other angle on that?
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
It's overall positive.
Yeah, like, who's the psychopath who's like, that son of a bitch, he should have just let it crash into the ocean.
Oh, well, it's like, yeah, then so you're talking about that ridiculous plot in Batman v Superman where that guy is like suing Superman for like not saving like him entirely. He's like, his legs don't work or something like that.
Yeah. Like if he eye lasered a school bus full of children, I'd be like, okay, maybe there's a problem here.
Yeah.
But yeah, like if he saved the cruise ship from sinking and brought it back to port and a couple people fell out the back, are you really going to blame him for not saving the ship?
Yeah. People have unusually high expectations for the alien that just arrived.
Yeah.
You know, and who
could just be sitting at his desk reporting on local football teams, everybody.
And that was the thing that people kind of had to say for those of us who liked Man of Steel. I didn't love it. I just kind of liked it. But they were like, well, you know, he's only been Superman for like a week. And, you know, which it's kind of a bullshit argument to make, because how super could you be if. But you really had to point out when he didn't succeed in saving everybody. Like, they got on him about that. But we kind of had to defend. It became a ridiculous argument in a thing that never really happened. And you can't get too mad if you save 4,000 people, but three guys unfortunately didn't make it out in time.
Yeah, I just,
why focus just on those three guys? Like, just, you know, it's amazing. You know, I don't know. It's just,
I don't know. But that's a fundamental flaw that's at the heart of all these movies that you cannot get around because they're constantly bringing it up.
Yeah.
You know, we all loved Superman, but we all didn't love Superman. Like, well, that's like the Star Trek problems we're always talking about.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, like, they said that, you know, the premise of the show is this thing, except it's not that thing.
Right, like, and it's not hard to figure out that it's not. So, like, even the biggest, you know, nose picker can figure out, like, I don't get this, you know?
Yeah, it's
like you and I can figure this out and explain it to everybody else, but in the back of your head, the cognitive dissonance, it's distracting.
It is, because, you know, what you're saying is just convenient. It doesn't actually gel with everything else that you said before.
Right.
It doesn't make any goddamn sense. What else did I have in my notes over here? So one of the things that kind of is nagging at me in the back of my mind is, so they talked about these three mother boxes and, you know, one of them was given to the Amazonians to guard, the other one to the Atlanteans, and a third one to men. And like in everything, men can't be trusted, so they had to bury it and forget it even existed.
Yeah, in the backyard, apparently.
And that was 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
5,000.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a history buff, but I'm pretty sure the only civilizations that were prominent 5,000 years ago were the Egyptians and the Hebrews. They were kicking around. But we get an image of, you know, literally out of the Lord of the Rings, these guys in medieval garb and horses burying this mother box about 2 feet in the ground in some forest somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be Earth 5,000 years ago.
Because my guess is that it's been so long that all those civilizations disappeared. That's why we don't hear about Amazonians and Atlanteans. And in that CGI montage in the back, there was a Green Lantern fighting.
That was cool because they've been around forever. Like, that's their,
right.
They're aliens. I kind of could excuse
that. The old gods too, remember?
Yes.
Which were all the Greek gods that Wonder Woman knows. None of them are around anymore.
Right.
So, you're right. It seems like an odd, I guess, but if you said 2,000 years ago, you'd be like, well, how come Jesus didn't mention it? Did he fight? I don't get it. You got to push it back a little.
It would have been a harder sell. I mean, it still would have been a hard sell at 2,000, not five. It just looks, I mean, it just presumes that no one here, you know, finished the sixth grade. That's really what they're doing is.
It didn't bother me.
Yeah, bothered me.
Bothered me was how terrible it all looked.
Why did Batman, whenever he jumped out of something, it sounded like an elephant? Literally, whenever he like would like walk through a door, it would be like, ga-dung, like, and then that cape sound with the leather.
Like, oh, I don't know.
Every time he literally exited or entered a room or vehicle, it was this tremendous sound.
Scene change. No, I don't know. I didn't hear that.
Oh, drove me insane. So there's one line that Steppenwolf had that got me, where like they start like firing guns at him, mm-hmm. and he grabs the gun. He goes, "Primitive beings."
No, he doesn't grab a gun. He grabs a fucking missile.
Okay, so missile, right? So now, 45 minutes earlier, he's fighting the Amazonians, Zonians,
Provode,
They had bows and arrows and swords.
And yeah, this he made short work of them.
Yeah, but like now he comments, "Gee, this is awfully primitive. This incredibly sophisticated laser guided missile thing." Anyway, that just stupid. So why was he in Russia, and why did he need a place without internet access?
Because the mother boxes were giving off signals that could be tracked, and he didn't want to be disturbed when he put the three of them together. No, I'm not saying it makes sense. I'm just saying that's what Cyborg said.
Okay, fine. Why? This is like a list of questions. So why does this happen, and what is going on here? And
I think a lot of that is also Zack Snyder doesn't understand what made people upset in Man of Steel, it goes back to that whole putting people in danger thing. There was absolutely no thought given to the fact that Superman levels a city when he's fighting Zod. Right. And everyone was like, oh my God, like skyscrapers fell. Thousands of people were probably in there. And he begrudgingly in Batman vs. Superman had to like put them in places where they could still cause mass destruction, but not kill people. Remember like that really awful thing on the news, like, fortunately, downtown is empty right now. Everyone's gone home for the night, so we can level this city block and no one will care.
Yeah.
You're like, well, that's pretty ham-fisted, but okay. And I think that before Joss Whedon got there, it was the same fucking thing. Where can I put them where it won't cause any damage? Because I still want to blow up everything I can. It's not that people are in danger and my heroes are trying to save them. It's how can I smash two giant figures together and not upset anyone while I do it?
Is that a thing about... Is that a studio thing, maybe? Because they
probably said something to him, but yeah. He probably just didn't understand. Like, it probably didn't click. And like, why is that bothering people? It's cool, isn't it? Who cares about the people? Because there's like a lack of connection there that he's not... I'm just assuming. I don't know. It just seems that way to me.
Because one of the things we talked about before we did this was that Armand White, the famous contrarian movie critic for the National Review and a few other places, talks about how he loves these movies because they are adult versions of comic book movies. And trying to look at this through that lens is, okay, I kind of see your point. They can be considered more adult in their perspective and everything, and they're not as jokey and silly as the Marvel films, which he loathes. But maybe he's onto something in that Zack Snyder's trying to do something more adult than Warner Brothers will let him do, because they still need that PG-13 rating, otherwise no one's going to go see these movies. So I wonder if he's sort of, you know, if in the director's cut, Metropolis is devastated and millions of people lie buried under piles of rubble, and then we go forward from there. But Warner Brothers says, no, you can't do that, Zach, because it's really sad, and kids won't buy lunchboxes and breakfast cereal if you do that with these characters.
See, I don't think that's what it is. Because I read a lot of books, and just in anything, when you're making something, and you have people who do those sorts of things, and they do it well. And you have people who do that sort of thing by accident, and they accidentally put messages in there because they don't know what they're doing. And my only caveat to that would be, what's the point of doing that exactly? Because if you wanted to show a more serious side to things and like, this is really what would happen and how would humans really react? The reactions to those things are wrong. Okay. Superman levels a city. Okay. But we're told we're still supposed to like it.
Him.
You know, we still love him. He's still the best of all of us. And then at the end of Man of Steel, the city is fixed and no one says anything, you know, and that's not explored. You know, so if you want to talk about the human toll and the human cost of and all that stuff, but then not really follow up, I can't give you the benefit of the doubt on that sort of thing. You're reading into something that's not really there because it doesn't go like your thought isn't going anywhere beyond that, you know?
Yeah.
I think the more adult way of looking at that stuff would be Watchmen, which he did.
Yeah, that is him.
Because that's about, okay, yes, people who think they're superheroes and one guy who has superpowers, but it's not just about them. It's about the world that they live in. The world is a disgusting, horrible place because of them. And peripheral characters have opinions on that. Not one newscaster and, you know, not one guy in jail and one senator. I mean, it's not explored. If that's what you want to do, then do that. But it just looks like an excuse to just blow shit up. I don't know.
Yeah, it's basically, it's incomplete. It's lazy. It's, you know, it that's how it comes across, at least. It's just like you really didn't think about this. And that was my main complaint about Man of Steel, too, was at the end, there they are, just like, you know, in the newsroom trying to put together the scoop. They're like, yeah, it's the hell.
I thought that building collapsed and killed thousands of people.
And the only thing that really makes that hard to swallow is that we lived through that already. That really already happened. And it's been, at this point, 16 years? And we're still, it informs decisions that people make on a day-to-day basis, and not people who live in New York, but people who live all over the planet Earth. That event informs so much on a small scale every day, 16 years later. And that was supposed to be like a week and a half, and everyone's cool with it. And it was a lot more in terms of what they showed you being destroyed. And, you know, also the aliens, kind of a big deal as well. Mm-hmm. So they're doing all these fantastical things and, you know, big adult grown-up type themes are happening here. But what they're really doing is making a kids movie. So the two things they don't fit. And so you get and you get this kind of crap at the end of it when no one seems to know what they're doing anymore.
Yeah, that's why the Marvel movies are a bit more successful because, yeah, some of the themes are weighty, but they're not that weighty, and kids can enjoy it, and then adults like you and I can read into it more and see slightly below the surface level stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, it's supposed to be, you know, take me seriously. Well, I have a hard time with that. So anyway.
Yeah, a couple small quick things I want to mention because they're funny. What does Aquaman do? He's just...
talks to fish.
Right, and he's just... he's Wonder Woman, but not as good.
But a dude?
Yeah. Same hairstyle. Real fast. Remember in that scene where they're running around that like that circular or cylindrical room and there's that slow motion thing where Wonder Woman is falling and trying to get the sword and the Flash is running around. Do you catch it that Batman in the middle of Flash is running around faster than whatever shoots his grappling hook and catches him?
Because he's falling, isn't he?
I think at that point he was still going fast. He was just falling fast too.
Oh, I didn't catch that. I found that the action scenes to be incomprehensible.
Yeah.
Because they just moved so quickly and there's so much happened. They were all very orange colored between the explosions and the sky was changing color. And
yeah.
I found them impossible to follow.
Yeah.
And we had good seats. You know, like I usually complain about like the camera was shaking or I sat too close. This time, literally, I just couldn't tell what was going on because the action was so fast and everything was the same color.
Yeah.
So unless it was slowed down, like all the flash scenes were okay because it was purposely slowed down. But everything with Batman and Wonder Woman and at the end Superman, I couldn't see anything.
Yeah, no.
And so like I tuned out. I was like, all right, I guess they're fighting now.
The movie looked like shit. Everyone's okay with Clark being alive now. He was dead too, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I've been very sick. Oh, I thought you were dead. Oh, no. Not, of course not.
I mean, they dug up his body in Kansas, you know.
I mean, they had a huge funeral for him.
Yeah.
The whole 15 people turned out.
Yeah, it rained. It was very sad.
Did you also notice how, like, they're fighting Superman as he wakes up, and they bring Lois Lane to, like, jog his memory, and she's shouting Clark right in full view of all the policemen?
Yeah.
I mean, I know he has the same face. There's no disguise, but it's very odd how there's no pretense of dual identities in these films. Just like,
yeah, it's kind of, I'm kind of okay with that to a certain degree.
They just can't tell, okay? They just can't tell. All right.
What was your, did you have a winner for worst line of the film?
Everything Gal Gadot said?
Yeah, no, she doesn't.
She can't act?
No, she really can't act. I can't believe that Jeremy Irons was bad in this movie. But he has that line where Batman complains about like things not going according to plan, and he says, This isn't the plan, it's the team.
Oh, that's bad.
That's so terrible that Jeremy Irons couldn't make it work. It just couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's not so good.
The very close runner up was I believe in truth, but I'm also a big fan of justice.
I like that line.
That's
that was okay.
Terrible. It's terrible. It's a terrible line.
Said by Superman. I mean, it's just.
It's terrible.
I mean, Superman should. If they're going to do a Superman like this, where his suit is actually bright blue and he's happy to be there, like, I don't know what they did, but they were like, okay, pretend you're enjoying yourself now. And he, like, made quips and shit like that. And, like, when he showed up, I was genuinely excited to see him because the rest of the movie was so terrible.
Yeah.
Like, ah, oh, Superman, maybe he'll do some punching. And he did. And I was like, okay.
But that
he's happy. I'm happy to see him.
But that wasn't why he was supposed to be there. They went on for like an hour about how he's a symbol and he's our salvation, he's our hope. But no, what they really wanted was for him to start punching things.
Yeah. And for give me 8 minutes, I paid $15 to see this. I want to see someone punch something really hard. Because I had nothing else. Everything else was so terrible.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the implications of this failure, which are significant. Now, you sent me an article today from the Weekly Standard where Jonathan Last was talking about the scale of the failure of this movie.
Yes, I enjoyed that.
That was, yeah, he's a really
not
good
that I
writer.
Enjoyed failure of movies. I enjoyed his analysis.
Yeah, so basically what he says was that, you know, we've had, you know, films that have failed miserably before. You know, John Connor of Mars is always mentioned, Waterworld. These were expensive movies that tanked. And this
one, too bad because John Carter was not the worst movie of all time.
No, it wasn't.
I enjoyed it. It was well written. Anyway.
Okay. Excuse me. So, but this movie, you know, those movies were not supposed to be sort of the linchpin of their franchises. And this is. Like, you've got four other movies that preceded it, and this is going to be the one that catapults them into the next sort of phase. This is phase two, as Marvel calls it. I mean, Aquaman is pretty much in the can, right? That's done.
Beats me.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I'm looking at it on Wikipedia. It's an upcoming superhero movie. They've got all kinds of people who are in it. You know, it's made. They finished it. For all intents and purposes, it's essentially, you know, good to go. Is anyone going to go see that now? I mean, they will, because, you know, somebody has to go see it. But after this one, just totally poops the bed. And this is following a movie that was considered by many to be the greatest film in the history of cinema.
What, this one?
No, Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it isn't like they're coming up after a stinker. You know, that's... I mean, what's strange about this one is that, like... So, Man of Steel grosses $291 million. Batman v Superman grosses $330 million. And they get worse. It doesn't get any better. Then Suicide Squad does just about the same as Batman v Superman, and it was considered to be terrible.
Oh, that's a shame, because that movie stunk so hard.
Right. And Wonder Woman, 412. And it is a better movie in some respects than the previous three. So your quality is, you know, you've got some peaks and valleys here, but for the most part, you're springboarding, you're in the wake of a to mix metaphors. You know,
where are we?
You're coming hard upon, you know, a movie.
Are we in a boat for this metaphor? What are we doing here?
It's very nautical.
Okay.
But you're just after, you know, an actually successful film. Although its success is somewhat inflated by the politics of the day, fine. But everyone liked Wonder Woman. It was okay. It was fine. It was good. This movie come, you know, and it only did like $96 million its first weekend. Most movies don't make a lot of money after their first weekend. They don't. They'll make the bulk of it during that time. There's a really great, one of the great metrics that they have here on Box Office Mojo is telling you what percentage of the movie's gross came from its opening weekend. And Wonder Woman, only 25% of its gross came from it's what people heard it was good and then went to see it after it opened. Okay? The other movies, it's all between 40% and 50% of the entire gross came in one weekend. So if we're talking about stinking movies that weren't that good, that 50% of their revenue came from the first weekend when no one knew if it was really good or not. There was just rumors. And this movie, which everyone knows is terrible, I gotta imagine it's not gonna break 300 domestically. Maybe not even two. So, I mean, they're in a heap of financial trouble after this movie.
This is what happens when you don't let them make the movies you want. And I mean that, like, okay, so Man of Steel, I liked enough. I still don't like Zack Snyder films. And so then they made Batman v Superman, and it was worse because, and I'm not saying it was only Zack Snyder, but the studio said, you got to have Batman, you got to have Superman, you got to cram all those other heroes in, we got to set up a universe now. And that surely hurt the film. Because remember that whole scene where she opens up the computer and there's like, here's a preview from everybody else's movie coming soon. And you're like, yeah. This is nothing to be in there. And then they had Suicide Squad and they butchered that guy's film. I mean, that film was horrendously terrible. I hate that film because the studio came in and messed it up. And then they let Patty Jenkins do Wonder Woman and she did a decent job. Okay. A woman director, a female superhero. Great. And then they interfered on this one again.
Well, let's bear in mind too that there were reasons that changes had to be made, you know, because of Zack Snyder stepping off the film. That, yes. You know, which we can excuse because we're not monsters,
right?
But you're right.
The same thing happens to the Avengers. So like when Joss Whedon wants to make Ultron, and they tell him you have to put the scene with Thor in the magic pool in. it hurts the film. And I understand that the studio has to do certain things, but at the same time, everyone sat there going, what is this doing here? It makes no sense. Weren't we just doing something else? And so, I mean, I can still remember my sister the other day when she complained about Wonder Woman. She goes, why was her skirt so short? And then I said, did you notice all the Amazons had midriffs showing? Whereas in Patty Jenkins's version, they just wore like leather and, I don't know, animal hide or whatever they wore. They weren't dressed to be sex objects. Whereas in this film, they were all wearing that crappy battle armor. They looked really stupid because we need to sell Amazon toys. And now we have a male director, and it's totally different.
Yeah.
So the constant meddling and having to set up franchises and things, it hurts.
Yeah.
That's my point.
And so, it's unfortunate because they have source material where they could make it work. You know, Marvel, you said before, it's a comic book. It's serialized. You just tell the story. You know, you can play within that, and the characters will survive. It can't be as casual as they are with the comic books where people die and get reborn. They're like little, you know, paper soap operas for preteen boys is what those comic books were. So, you know, you could do all kinds of things that you couldn't do in a major motion picture you're trying to market all over the world. But how they wanted what Marvel had because Marvel makes a lot of money and they wanted to make a lot of money. So I'm not saying this is easy. I'm saying it couldn't have been that hard that it came out this poorly.
I agree with Jonathan. Is it last or Vass?
Last.
I agree with him in that it was miscast and mismanaged from day one. Okay, like Ben Affleck looks like he smiled at the end of this movie because I think he was happy to be done. You know, Gal Gadot is there to get a paycheck because she can't act. She's just good looking.
She's just very, very, very handsome.
Jason Momoa, I actually thought was fine. They just didn't give him a lot to do. You have a ridiculous character to start with, so just, you know, do whatever you want.
I don't love the take, but I think it's better than like
Stoic
King of the Ocean would have been pretty boring.
Yeah, the guy who plays the Flash, Ezra Miller, he's fine.
He was terrible.
I mean, his problem is he's not well written.
No.
They wrote him kind of neurotic, and I know you don't watch it, but our buddy Greg was going to be on this one tonight. He couldn't make it. He watches The Flash on TV, and so do I. And that guy is phenomenal. He's very, very good. First of all, he's written better, but also he's charming. He's funny. He's happy to be there. This guy is like neurotic. He meets friends. He doesn't understand anything. His quips weren't funny. You know, so the guy on TV is vastly more entertaining. Okay. Henry Cavill's fine. They just don't give him anything to do. Half the time he's CGI.
Yeah, right. He was barely even there.
Yeah, I mean, but even you got Jesse Eisenberg. He's horrendous as Lex Luthor. J.K. Simmons is great, but he doesn't have much to do with that part.
Yeah.
Neither does Amy Adams.
Underused J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, it's horrendous. It's horrible. So you would think someone would come in there and be like, I don't know if this is working, you know? And just not one. He was right in the article. Not one part of this works. So how do you fix that? I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know how you fix that.
I mean, I can see them making better movies of the individual characters because those movies are easier to write.
Yes.
I mean, writing a movie with five protagonists is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, the Avengers, we were all very skeptical of that. Same with Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, when you have a team of people that all have to work together to solve a problem, you've got multiple things you have to do, whereas if you have simply one protagonist, one hero, you know, it's just a simpler story to tell.
Yeah.
And so,
extremely. I mean, I remember seeing the preview for the, first of all, I didn't think they'd have enough money to pay all the people in the Avengers. Silly me, the bazillion-dollar company that it is. But also with the Guardians, we were like, there's no way that's going to work. The tree, the raccoon, what are they smoking over there?
Yeah.
But it can be done. I'm not saying it's easy, but it can be done.
It's hard to do it twice. Like Guardians 2 didn't work. It wasn't as good. Avengers 2 didn't work. Wasn't as good. Captain America Civil War was basically the third Avengers movie, and it worked because they were fighting each other.
Yeah. So even that was tough. There was a lot of logic there.
But basically the core of the story was, you know, which do you believe is right, Captain America or Iron Man?
Yeah.
And so they focused on those two characters as being the ringleaders of their respective sides.
Regulatory oversight.
Yeah, that's kind of what the whole thing was about. I think back to that scene in like the hangar or wherever they were, where Bruce is like, "No, what we have to do is take their mother box and somehow use it to reanimate Superman, who's been dead for a year." And they're like, "Dude, this is a terrible idea. We should not do this." Like Aquaman thought this was a bad idea. Aquaman didn't think anything was a bad idea up to that point. He was cool with everything.
Well, okay, so why do they think that was a bad idea? Because they didn't know what would happen? They thought it might make a monster?
They're going to reanimate a dead god.
Okay. I was like, but wouldn't it be good to have this guy on your side?
Wouldn't give you pause, though? You know what? I'm not so sure we should be Frankensteining this guy right now. They make a reason, and his retort is like, well, this is what science is for. Like,
oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember that scene. It's just for pushing the boundaries of, I'm like, wait, I don't think that's true.
No, that's false, Bruce.
Okay, so, but to be fair, to me, I actually thought that was the only good scene of the movie, when Superman comes to life and they fight him for like 3 minutes. I was actually interested because I know Superman as a character, and I was like, how are they going to do this? And I knew Lois Lane was going to show up, but like, I really enjoyed like when they all pile on him and the Flash decides to run, and like Superman is all frozen to the Flash sees it really slow, and then Superman's eyes just move and he turns real slow, and the Flash realizes that he can go as fast as him.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is kind of interesting, at least fun to watch.
Well, yeah. You
know, I mean, the whole reason for it happening was stupid. Oh, my suit can't stop from turning, you know, shooting at him. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't you just fly away?
As cool as that was, one of the things that bothers me about it is like if they set it up that, you know, Superman is as fast as the Flash, then what do you need the Flash for? Like, that the thing has to be that although he's not Superman, the Flash is faster than Superman. And that's been a consistent thing, I'm pretty sure, throughout the comic books, was that. And we can get to the other bit.
He's only been the Flash for like a week.
Yeah, right. we'll get to the other thing later. But like, basically, this movie has also set up Superman to be completely invincible.
Yeah. And he was like that in Man of Steel, too, though.
Yeah, because they hadn't discovered Kryptonite yet, but he was fighting Kryptonians, so the odds were sort of evened up, you know, and Batman gets a hold of the green stuff in the previous film. But, I mean, you're makes quick work of the guy with the devil horns. I mean, it really didn't stand a chance. So, like, where do we go from here with this character? Like, what are you going to throw at me next? Like, they tease Darkseid, but this guy wasn't the problem, and he was supposed to be kind of like Darkseid or like the precursor to Darkseid. And he lasted all of 8 minutes.
That was such a horrible. I'm still not sure. Why did they attack him?
Oh, because he was afraid, and they could smell the fear. Didn't you catch it from the first scene of the movie when that criminal, for no reason, is trying to kill Batman because he thinks he's the one who can do it?
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's where the bug thing comes up.
Right, yeah. He's like, what are you going to do to me? He's like holding him over the edge of the building. They can smell fear. What?
Oh, man. Because like at one point, they were all fighting Superman, and next thing you know, they just turned around and started fighting him. I'm like, but I thought he was on their side.
Yeah.
The movie was over. I'm like, okay.
Because Superman was so good, that guy became afraid, and they all turned on him.
Man, that is a stretch.
That's some weak tea, dude.
In here. That's quite like, what?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that's why you don't make Superman that invincible. He wasn't that invincible in the cartoon.
No.
And that's a much better. And what's great was my second favorite scene was the mid-credit scene where like Superman and the Flash are going to race.
Yeah, I could have watched that a little bit.
They did an episode of the Superman cartoon like that, where they race each other for charity. Like, you know, it'll be fun. Everyone will watch us. And Superman doesn't care. And the Flash is like, I'm going to win. Like, he takes it really seriously. He's like, I'm the fastest man alive, and we're going to prove this. And as they race, they end up, like, having to stop some villain from doing whatever. But it was really cool. Like, they had to team up. And 21 minutes, it was a great story. I looked at Greg, and I was like, I would have watched an entire movie about that. Like, I really would have. It would have been way more fun than this.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't anything
have been?
Well, as Spider-Man Homecoming showed us, it doesn't have to be apocalyptic to always hold my interest.
Right.
So, anyway.
Anything else we have to say about this?
I thought the CGI looked really bad.
Everything looked bad. Like,
Cyborg looked terrible.
You could kind of, like, one of the things that was also in the article from Jonathan Last was that you could not see where the money went. Like, they spent, oh, Christ, how much money did they spend on this movie?
$300 million.
Yeah, $300 million on a film. And, like, in Batman v Superman, you could see where it went. Like, there was a car chase. You know, there was things that exploded. You know, and yes.
There was Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, and CGI is not cheap, but, you know, you could see the money. Like, there was, it was obvious. This could have been made on a MacBook Pro. Honest to God.
Yeah, Steppenwolf didn't look good. Didn't look good.
Oh, it was cartoony and stupid.
And I think the Red Alert Media guys had this too. And I already agreed, but it was like, what, you know, sophisticated New York Times writers always say is, it looked very video game-ish. It looked like a video game cartoon and a video game fight. And they always say that because in video games, you get a do-over. You get infinite lives and it continues and you just do it again. It's there's no stakes in a video game, technically.
Right.
So they would say, well, Steppenwolf, oh, the epitome of video game villainy and shit like that. And he said the same thing I was thinking as I was watching the movie. I've seen video games with a better graphics than this. By far. Like, it's not like I've seen video games where I've actually gasped at how good they look. And yeah. I was looking at this like, what is this, like a Bugs Bunny cartoon? Like, it didn't look good.
No, that weird thing was like the rocks are like purple rocks are flying out and then they all turn to flowers at the end.
Oh man.
You know,
it looked like a Windows 95 screensaver. Oh. It's horrible.
That's what it was. There it is.
Where's the flying toasters? Or just throw them in there.
Expected Clippy to show up and tell you how to write a letter.
Seems like you're trying to save the world. Can I help with that? Oh, no. It was bad.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Anything you enjoyed? Or
no.
Oh, okay.
Nothing. I like the race thing at the end.
Yeah.
You know.
The 2 minutes.
Yeah. That wasn't even 2 minutes.
No, it might have been shorter.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Any of you liked this movie and want to tell us that we're full of shit, you're welcome to try. You can tweet us at @3drinksinpod. That's @3drinksinpod. You can send us a picture of you giving us the middle finger on Instagram. We're 3drinksinpodcast on Instagram and Facebook. And if you want to write to us, 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. But most importantly, we want you to go to iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Store, and tune in. Subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And very importantly, leave us a rating and maybe even a review. We'd really appreciate that.
Takes like 5 seconds.
Very quick. It's not that hard to do at all. You can just hit the star button, 5 stars. It doesn't cost you a thing. Is that it? Are we done?
Would you have preferred to see Vinny Chase as Aquaman, or is Jason Momoa doing it for you?
I forgot about that. That's really funny.
I could not stop thinking about that. I want to get one of those Vinny Chase Aquaman posters and put it up right in here.
With like the total at the bottom because they beat Spider-Man. All right, everybody. As always, please drink responsibly, and we'll talk to you again.
Take care.
Here come old backtop, he come grooving slowly. He got juju eyeball, he want holy roller. He got hair down to his knee. Got to be a joker, he just do what you please.
What was the second one? I forget. It was The Flash was the first one, and then the second one was...
For what?
The post-credit sequence.
Oh, with Lex Luthor?
Christ, I forgot about that. So we just did this whole thing where we told you Superman is basically indestructible. He can beat up gods.
Yeah, let's get the guy with two swords on his back.
And, like, Deathstroke? Is it Deathstroke? Yeah.
Yeah. That's Joe Manganiello, who's huge.
Is that who that was?
Yeah, that's him.
I totally didn't.
Yeah, they dyed his beard white or something.
Yeah, he looks like old and ancient. And
yeah, he's supposed to be an older kind of character.
And Joe, I can't think of how to say his name. Manganiello?
Is it Manganiello?
Joe, I'm sorry.
Brobeans, you know him. That's how I think. The guy is supportive of his balls.
Yeah. So like, but like, you know, we're on my boat, and I'm Lex Luthor, and I talk like this. And you're like, it's not really a good impersonation of.
I thought maybe he'd like tone it down, and then he started talking like this. And I'm like, oh my god, does he not read the reviews of his own work?
I mean, I wouldn't. But yeah,
man. No, I wouldn't either. But someone should have at least mentioned it to him that no one liked your portrayal of this character.
Yeah, oh, man. God.
Look, when you watch that Justice League cartoon. They were smart enough to know that Superman was too powerful to be in a world with Batman. They just don't mesh. So what they did was, rarely did they have all seven members. There was Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, Hawkgirl for whatever reason, and the Martian Manhunter. Rarely did they have all seven together, because it was, first of all, it was hard to have seven people in one scene. Second of all, most things don't require the use of Superman. So what they did was they would pair them off. They would have Flash and Green Lantern, or they put Wonder Woman and Hawkgirl and Batman. Like, they would pair them, and they would change the pairs every so often. And Superman was in it every so often. But when, like, you know, if you were just trying to catch a jewel thief, Superman didn't bust through the wall and catch the guy, because then the story's over. And they didn't, it was great because they just didn't say where they were. They were just off somewhere doing something, you know? Like, why is Batman handling this with the Flash? Because they are. It's a good pairing. Batman is slow and scary, and the Flash is fun and zippy. That's a good 20 minutes.
Zippy. I like that.
Yes. You know, so like, okay, so Steppenwolf was not a good villain. Okay, sure, but Superman had to be there to punch him in the face.
Yeah, otherwise he was...
Batman, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise you don't need him. Batman was very inconsequential to the whole thing. But you don't need Superman to punch Lex Luthor in the face, because he'll put a hole through him. You know?
Well, not if he has a pie. Bites. If he has a pie, yeah. The pie might...
Did you like that exploding penguins line?
Yeah.
Now, was that from Superman 3? In that...
No, right? Or that was that from Batman Returns.
Yes. That's what Greg said. But in Superman 3, when the pie hit him in the face and all the wackiness was going on, weren't there like inflatable things that were walking on the sidewalk that would explode for no reason? Weren't those the inflatable penguins?
It's possible.
Okay. We were drunk then, so I don't really remember.
I'm sure it was fine.
Yeah, but.
All right.